listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, entertaining you since 1965. Now, the Road to OKC Softball Show with Ryan Chapman and former Sooner National Champion and current OKC Spark pitcher Alex DeRocco on your home for the Sooners, 107.7, The Franchise.
What's up? How's everybody doing? Time for the Road to OKC. Ryan Chapman alongside the great Alex Draco. Just like Big Voice Guy said, Alex, another weekend, a dominant weekend for the Sooners down in Lubbock, 40-3. It was a show. It was a show for Oklahoma this past weekend.
Yeah, it was kind of unexpected in maybe some terms. I don't know. There were some fun things that happened, and for me that is still kind of mind-blowing was the 12 runs scored before an out was even recorded for a game, and like that's got to be some sort of record. So I'm curious as if to anyone can find that out, because that was still just so mind-blowing. But all around fun, explosive, exciting weekend for the Sooners.
The only issue was the inability to put balls and strikes, to put the count on the ticker. That was like literally the only issue for trying to watch Oklahoma play some softball on ESPN Plus this weekend.
I do appreciate the guy. I think on Sunday there was a guy behind the backstop that was like keeping, you know, the count.
He had his balls and strikes mixed up though.
Yes.
He kept putting up like 2-3, and I was like, so we have a strikeout? What happened here? What is going on?
Yeah, no, I was grateful for him, because at some point I would like check out and check back in, and I'm like, oof, I'm a little lost. But other than that, I think it went pretty well for the Sooners.
It was anything you wanted across the board. Like you mentioned, Saturday, the fireworks show that was sending 12 batters to the plate, scoring 12 runs before you record an out. Friday, you had so much to dive into. It was the monster seventh inning, top of the seventh for Oklahoma, to create one of the more unlikely. It wasn't a run rule, but it felt like a run rule. You had Sunday, which was less of a seventh-inning explosion or a first-inning explosion, and more felt like just a steady chipping away. I think part of that had to do with the fact that it looked like the wind might have been blowing in a little bit more, because there were the couple of balls, the back-to-back, what on Friday or Saturday probably would have been back-to-back home runs from Jada Coleman and T.R. Jennings in the second inning that ended up being warning track power two times. And then you got all of that. T.R.E. Jennings, 12 RBIs for the weekend, 6 on Friday. You're a Big 12 player of the week. Kelly Maxwell, 10 strikeouts. She even was just unbothered at all by the bases getting juiced. And what was that, the bottom of the sixth? And she almost looked just more angry that it happened, and then like firing through. Kirsten Deal getting a Saturday start instead of the Sunday slot. Nicole May coming in and keeping Texas Tech off the board for the most part. Like top to bottom, A ton of good for Oklahoma. Another just dominance is like the only word I think you can conjure to explain what happened against Iowa State in game two and game three, and what happened across three games in Lubbock.
Yeah, for sure. I think another big thing too is it looked freezing on air. So, you know, I was, you know, fortunate enough to be cozy and comfy while watching them. And I feel like that is always kind of underrated in when it comes to just the play and specifically pitching. Like I know just myself, I was a little bit more acclimated to the cold when I came to OU, but it does make it a little bit harder just to like spin the ball and, you know, fight those kinds of things and stay warm as even when you have like the offense having longer innings, it is harder to, you know, stay warm, stay kind of locked in that kind of weather and everything. But like you said, from top to bottom, it was pretty dominant. It was exciting, and you saw literally everyone get in. I think the only one who really didn't was SJ. She didn't get her appearance for the weekend. But other than that, everyone really stepped up to the plate quite literally. And so it was fun and just electric.
You got all five pitchers in except for SJ, like you mentioned. Be interested to see if SJ gets some run against UC Arlington on Wednesday night. If you're listening to the Wednesday rerun of this show, Alex and I firing this up after OU baseball closed down their midweek contest against Dallas Baptist on Tuesday. But that's one of the big question marks there. But even when you look at the offense top to bottom, everyone got plenty of innings. Everyone got plenty of at-bats, obviously. I thought Avery Hodge had a really good Sunday going 2-for-2. She also had that hit on Saturday. You had Maya Bland getting some more at-bats. You had key at-bats from Riley Ludlum starting on Friday once Kinzie Hansen was withdrawn. We'll talk about that here in a bit as we talk to Patty Gasso on Tuesday about all that. Ludlum rocking and rolling. You had Sydney Sanders doing it in a much different way on Friday. We wondered what was the wrinkle going to be, right? Coach Snyder at Texas Tech threw a different pitcher every inning a year ago. What was the weird thing going to be? He just refused to pitch to Sydney Sanders, basically, until they had to in the seventh inning. And Sydney Sanders got four walks, couldn't get five walks, wasn't good enough to get five. Kidding. Got the RBI. It was a sack fly, basically. But it was a bit of everything offensively, a bit of everything from the pitching staff. I get a sense that's the kind of performance that Patty Gasso just loves, because it truly was all the things she talks about, living pitch to pitch, being locked in, having energy in the dugout for everyone to eat like they did this weekend. That's what has to happen.
Yeah, and another thing that really stuck out to me was in Coach Gasso's presser this week too, was just how she loved to see just the camaraderie throughout the team in the dugout, and you know, everyone's kind of involved and everyone's really chipping away, and you see that support from 1 through 21. There's no one, you know, pouting on the corner or anything like that. And I think that's what's so special about just the program in itself. Year after year, you see just players are supporting players, no matter if they're, you know, also competing for that position that you are, or just another person that is just key to contributing to the game. And so I feel like that's really sticking out to me, especially as we're going into conference and really ramping up that, you know, meaningful middle part of the season that Coach loves to talk about.
We'll dive into all that, but there was one thing that you already mentioned a little bit that I wanted to just ask, because you've lived it. Last year, making the transition in, we asked you in post games a little bit, as a pitcher, when you're not used to sitting for 30 minutes because your offense is just absolutely just going to town, what is that process like to mentally stay locked in, to stay warm? How did you have an adjustment to that? But for anyone that missed it, what was that process like? And then how does that change when it's literally the top of the first inning? For Kirsten Deal on Saturday, going through all of her pregame throwing, and then to sit for almost 30 minutes in a chilly atmosphere, how do you manage that as a pitcher?
Yeah, it was definitely a big jump for me. But more so for me, it was the heat. I didn't know how to stay cool and, you know, be able to kind of stay cool throughout in those big, long times. I was more used to having to stay warm throughout a game and just the chillier temperatures. So for me, it was just like just staying locked into a game plan. And like I constantly had like my notebook of, you know, the lineup and going over that. So it was more of a mental preparation instead of really a physical one. Now, that's obviously different, cold versus warm. And cold, you want to stay moving. There's a lot of little preparation steps that pitchers take, like, you know, band warm-ups, or previously for me, it was, you know, being on a bike. So there's just different things that, you know, each pitcher kind of prepares differently and prefers. Like, I remember specifically, like, UCLA in Mary Nutter last year, because Mary Nutter was really, really cold last year for what would be California. And like I was, you know, doing band work with my legs and my arm like 100% of the time. And I feel like half of my like pictures from OU softball in the beginning half of the season, I have like a heater on my arm and shoulder. So just staying like prepared in that kind of way. And like for me, it was always like going over my notes again and again and again. So like it wasn't like I was checking out at any point in time.
We've seen stuff like that before in different ways. I remember a couple years ago when Hope Trotwine came in, kind of odd because she had pitched at North Texas. And so obviously pitching in Denton, you get the Texas heat, stuff like that. I don't think she had pitched as deep into the season before as she did with Oklahoma. And so for her, it wasn't fatigue. It was quite literally a sweat management situation of how to keep her throwing hand dry. And so I'm kind of curious for a Peyton Monticelli, that it's going to be different coming from Wisconsin once she's coming in for relief innings in the postseason. I don't think Kelly Maxwell should have any issues with it, because she's not only pitched in Oklahoma, but she's pitched deep in Oklahoma, pitched at the World Series in June. Just interesting that that's not really an angle probably this year that Jen Roach is going to have to deal with. But all the same, I'm just always curious what it's like just getting mentally prepared. Hey, the game's about to start. Oh, I'm glad I'm getting run support. Oh my gosh, it's been 30 minutes. There's 12 runs on the board. And I feel like it's probably easy for this pitching staff to stay focused because not only are they competing as the other team, but you're competing to continually show, like, you need to pitch me again next series, stuff like that. But I just always wonder, like, do you have to go and rewarm up at a certain point? But
oh,
knowing
absolutely.
That, like, three outs in, you could be coming out of the pit. Like, I just don't know what the logistics of, like, sneaking back out to the pen to start throwing halfway through the top of the first inning.
Oh, for sure. And a big thing for me was I would always, like, be good, like, if I had to rewarm up, like, two outs was a thing. And then, like, I play for OU, so, like, when you're two outs, we love to score all of our runs with two outs. So then it's, like, how do I really time this so I'm not sprinting from a bullpen just to stay warm? So you just kind of have to have, like, a good feel of the game. And, you know, I think another big mindset, too, that I kind of dove into was, like, quite literally the game does not go on without you. So you can take your time and kind of have your little bit of a diva/princess moment if you want to. So I think that was a big thing, too, and just kind of owning the moment whenever and however you need to.
What did you think of Kirsten getting the Saturday start? Was that surprising to you at all?
Truthfully, no. I know last year Coach mixed up the Friday, Saturday, Sunday just kind of go-to lineups and everything. So I was kind of expecting her to switch it up in some way, shape, or form just to get a different feel. And so that nobody quite literally gets comfortable because, like, I know we've talked about a million times, she does not like to repeat a lineup. So it really didn't surprise me. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of adjustments even now because we're so deep in a pitching staff. Who knows? Maybe she'll throw Carly Keeney out there for a start too. So I think you can never really guess. I feel like the only thing that's really kind of maybe concrete is Kelly on a Friday.
Yeah, Kelly on a Friday. And even this year, the Jada 1, Riley 9 has not been a constant, which has been throwing me for a loop personally. As I go look at the lineup, I'm like, ugh. I just wondered if Coach talks a lot about being able to switch left-hander, right-hander, left-hander, throwing different looks at teams, stuff like that. And we've seen earlier this year the relief pairings be whether it's SJ or Peyton, the righty comes in for the lefty comes in for the righty to switch that up. I just wondered if Patty Gasso would keep the Kirsten deal on Sunday just because it meant that every single day off the top it was you saw a lefty, now you saw the righty, now you saw like from the start, especially because she's been rolling Kelly's pitch count up there a little bit, talking about basically ramping in these pitchers into, yes, they want to use the staff, but at a certain point, you need to get up into the 130s pitch count so that when it comes postseason time and you need Kelly Maxwell to go seven innings, she's conditioned to go seven innings.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part too. And even in myself, I felt that I wasn't truly conditioned like I was previously at Michigan. And so I think that's also a huge part of just preparation. I had to start kind of doing my own extra little endurance after practice, whether that was, you know, just running poles and, you know, staying kind of in shape in that sense. And you don't really think of that maybe on the outside, but cardio and endurance is like a huge part of pitching, whether that's, you know, you're actually pitching or not. And so even just in my off season training, now gearing up for spark season, it's been a lot of, you know, cardio endurance type stuff and not just solely pitching, because I feel like everyone is like, oh, how many days of the week that you pitch? I'm like, not four or five, like you might think, like how I used to in college. And everyone, I feel like, is super surprised by that. But when you're able to keep in shape in a different way, I feel like I learned this a lot at Michigan of, like, being able to stay warm, get warm, and not have to throw your arm in a rotation is huge when it comes to just the longevity and, you know, not just getting injury prone as well as, like, being able to warm up in different ways. So I feel like Kelly kind of can see that, maybe not setback, but just the difference of maybe her longevity throughout the season instead of, you know, being prepared to either make an appearance or start every other game, if not every game kind of deal. And I feel like you can kind of see it too, just like in just the way that she's just confidence and just kind of poised and has a little bit more of a balance throughout the game. And in that seven innings, she's like, this is my seven innings. I'm going to give it my all this Friday because that's what I got to do for the weekend. And that's such a different aspect that you don't usually or not used to having in a mindset way for the weekend.
Yeah. I'm not sure how this was for you, your experience coming in, but obviously covering Oklahoma, I've watched a lot more Kelly pitch than some of the other transfers that just come in because you're monitoring for Big 12 standing, stuff like that. And I think one of the good things is that Kelly is used to, she was the ace of Oklahoma State staff, but she also did come in spots in relief. And so I don't think for her she's had to, and Patty Gasso's used her a couple of times this year coming in relief in a seventh inning, almost in a way of probably like, okay, at some point in the postseason, you may need to come in and settle something down. I want you to be comfortable with that. But I don't think it's something that Kelly's uncomfortable doing because she had that experience at Oklahoma State. So at least she's got that going, as well as she can. It's not a, not everything is brand new. The newest thing to Kelly Maxwell, I think, is the lesser number of innings she's pitching. But I think at this point in her career, she totally gets it. I don't think that that was a tough pitch to send her way, especially because she was on a staff last year with between Kilfoyle and Kyra Acock and Rosenberry. That's what everyone was trying to do. She just did a lot of the innings. So good performances all around. We'll talk a lot more about the offense. But on the other side, Alex, we did get news from Patty Gasso, an update. I hesitate to call it news. Good news as far as the Kinzie Hansen front. I know that that was probably the number one question I got from 5 trillion people this weekend. We did get some confirmation on the status of Kinzie Hansen. We'll talk about that next. Talk about Oklahoma's third-string catcher because I'm fascinated by that whole situation and more about what Oklahoma's offense did in Lubbock. You're listening to The Road to OKC here on 107.7 The Franchise. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to The Road to OKC Softball Show with Ryan Chapman and former Sooner national champion and current OKC Spark pitcher Alex DeRocco on your home for the Sooners, 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back, Road to OKC, rolling on, Ryan Chapman, alongside Alex Stracco. Alex, you are a Chicagoan, okay. How does Oklahoma City St. Patty's Day rate to, I know, the absolute fiesta that is everything that goes on with Chicago?
Oh, boy.
I know it's not the same at all. Like, yeah. I don't think anyone around here is naive to think, because obviously there's a huge Irish community, Chicago, all that stuff. But, like, were you able to get your kicks? Has that been, this is what, round two of St. Patty's Day, but the first time you've actually been on the weekend where you can enjoy it? Were you able to at least feel like you did enough?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely was in the city and just kind of, I felt myself just, like, people watching a lot. I loved people watching. I feel like that just stems also from a very populated area that Chicagoland is. I'm just going to put it out there that I don't think anything will ever compare to a Chicagoland St. Patrick's Day unless I'm literally in Ireland. So
fair.
I don't know. I feel like I'm just going to be a huge advocate of, like, if you can take a trip to Chicago for St. Patrick's Day, do it. Bear the cold, do it.
Well, it just, it becomes the, you know, the iconic, just the videos that come out from the river of the jumpers, all that stuff. So I just look, something that I think a lot of people in the softball world are accustomed to is there are a lot of programs across the country. They're like, if you want to be the best, you got to compare yourself to the best. So they like to look and see what Oklahoma's doing, stuff like that. So if Oklahoma City wants to be the best, they've got to compare themselves to the best. So I just want to do a little check-in. Like, if they're doing okay, is OKC doing okay when it comes to the Patty's Day celebration?
Individually, in areas, yes. As Oklahoma City as a whole, not even close.
Yeah.
Like, we got to, like, dye the Bricktown water or something. Or
something in, like, the like Scissortail, the little lake thing in Scissortail should be green.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would be a good thing to do.
Absolutely. I just don't think that there'll be enough, like, buy-in. I feel like the people of Chicago quite literally shut the city down when it comes to St. Patrick's Day. And I find myself every year, I'm like, you guys don't understand, like, St. Patrick's Day. And, like, I didn't realize once I got to college, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you guys don't really celebrate, like, St. Patrick's Day. And they're like, what do you mean that you do? I'm like, that's kind of crazy. I feel like it was a national holiday type of thing.
A big to-do.
Growing up, like, everything was green. It also helped, like, I loved Shamrock Shakes growing up. So, like, when those got released, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're getting ready for
it's
St.
Time.
Patrick's Day.
It's
like,
time.
This is, oh yeah, like a whole thing. Like,
I think for me, like, my version of the holiday of that is, like, Peeps. I was, like, one of the, and I know, and I, if this is an audio medium, Alex just said, this is disgusting. I can't believe I work with someone like this every single week. Like, the look on her face was disgusting. And I had the exact opposite reaction until I was like 10. Then like 1 year, I think I ate too many Peeps. And then like once you go over the edge, it's like everyone has this experience of there's one alcohol that you were introduced to probably as, I was going to say as a freshman in college, but it's actually when you turn 21, right, kids? Right? Yeah. And you have one bad night and you're like, I'm never drinking X alcohol again. Everyone in their minds right now has that exact one. Mine was a vodka that came in plastic bottles. Shout out to the s'mores one. But I feel like Peeps, it was one of those things where you're just like, it's fine until you go overboard. And they're just like, it's done. It's absolutely done.
Well, another thing with St. Patrick's Day, like, I've always had softball, like spring events. Like, I don't know like what to do now. This is my first ever spring break. I'm currently on spring break. And I'm in Norman, Oklahoma.
You're in a studio with me. You're doing this wrong now. You are doing it very wrong.
I love Norman, but I don't know how to vacation point blank. Like, I don't know. And so everyone's like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing this week for spring break? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I don't have a trip planned. I haven't been planning Cabo or any of those luxurious kind of fun places for spring break, because I quite literally have always been on a softball field. So I'm handling it. I'm watching softball from my couch, and honestly, it's been really nice.
You're handling it really well. Big result tonight, by the way. Shout out to the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. Winners, upset winners over number 4 Oklahoma State. We'll dive into that a little bit later, but jokes aside, I just wanted to check in. I knew you're heading out for, I think you labeled it as green festivities on Saturday, and I didn't ever occur to her. I was like, okay, she's from Chicago. She's going to be very disappointed. It didn't occur to me, like, she's not done this outside of the whole setup, so I hope it was everything you dreamed of, but there was business to take care of on Saturday. One of the storylines that came out of Saturday was no Kinsey Hansen starting in that game or playing in that game. You could see her in the dugout if you're watching the ESPN Plus thing. So for me, I'm just going to take you through what my brain did. She was pulled out of that game on Friday. I didn't think anything of it at that point because Oklahoma had really pulled in front. It was a little bit earlier than the big lineup changes, stuff like that, but she'd hit the home run. Everything looked good. Didn't think much of it. Didn't play on Saturday. Didn't play on Sunday. So my brain goes to, she was sick on Tuesday. She wasn't in the dugout, but she was in the dugout. What could that be? Well, Patty Gasso put that all to bed on Tuesday. She labeled it as a tweak of the knee. It's a day-to-day injury. She went out of her way to be like, it is not season-ending. We are not worried about that. It's just a management being smart with Kinsey Hansen. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, like I said, we're doing this Tuesday after a U.S. baseball game. So if the UT Arlington game has already happened, you'll obviously know if she played or not. By the sounds of it, I'd be shocked if it's not a take the night off, just manage it, see what it feels like this weekend. But obviously, that's really good news, because even when you just hear tweak, knee, my brain goes back to the really hellacious 2022 season on Kinsey Hansen, where she was doing everything she could, but she kind of struggled with that stuff. So Patty Gasso seemed very, very calm about it. And I just know that was like one of the biggest questions coming out of the weekend, because it was so dominant. Was, oh my gosh, what's up with Kinsey Hansen? It doesn't sound like it's anything big or whatever. Thankfully, that's something that Oklahoma, there's a depth at a lot of positions. There's not much depth at catcher.
Right. And like you said, my phone also blew up over the weekend of like, what's going to happen? Is she okay? Or do you have any answers? And I'm like, I don't know. She's playing. I'm watching. Like, I'm just as clueless as you guys. But she was sick last week, and in just fighting whatever's going around. I feel like there is a lot of whatever going around, whether that's a flu or a stomach bug or whatever it is. And this is also just like the worst time. I'm like, don't you understand? Like, OU softball has to play, and it's Kinsey Hansen. Why are we getting Kinsey Hansen sick? But that's just a whole nother thing. And you know, just the badass catcher that Kinsey Hansen is, she's going to want every rep possible. So even if this is just a minor tweak, or even if it was bigger, like, she'd do everything in her power to get behind the plate. And that's just who she is as a softball player and a person. Like, she puts 100% effort in everything that she does. And, you know, that's what you want in a catcher. And that's why her nickname is K-9 in every way, shape, or form, because she has that just dog in her. And I love just, like, that metaphor within itself. But, like, I think in the grand scheme of things, I know that that was like the huge headline for the weekend. But there were so many other things that happened that, you know, people, fans, don't worry about it. We're going to be good. And we have Riley Ludlum to back us up. And, of course, she jams her fingers on the base pass while diving back into the bag.
An incredible turn of events. And incredible, I don't mean like incredible, like in a good way, of just sitting there.
The one weekend.
I try to refrain from texting you during the games because I imagine that you just get like a billion others. But there's a second that I was rolling through my head. I was like, okay, let me think back to a year ago. Okay. Kinsey Hansen, Haley Lee, you had Nugent. Jocelyn Erickson would step out there if, for instance, if Hansen was catching and she was just like the last out that was made in the field and she's trying to get all of her equipment on, Erickson would toss the mask on and just go pop back there and catch the first couple or whatever. Then I was like, okay, Haley's graduated. Sophia Nugent's at Tennessee. Erickson's at Florida. I was like, who is next? And who else would it be? I confirmed on Tuesday with Patty Gasso. They had, it sounds like, a very informal third string catcher tryout. I don't know if it was when they got back from Lubbock or if it was just before the game on Saturday. And it was Alina Torres. Because why wouldn't it be Alina Torres? She plays every position that Oklahoma needs. I fully expect Alina Torres to log some relief innings at some point, probably during regional play. That's just what Patty Gasso does.
Yeah, no, honestly, I'm not surprised. And knowing Alina, too, she was also like my locker buddy. So we were right next to each other in the locker room, too. But knowing her, she was like, she's probably like hoping for some innings like behind the plate. And I think even Coach said it in the presser of like, no, please, please don't ask for that. Please, please, please don't ask for that. But just like Torres is like, I'll do anything. I'll put me wherever, Coach. Like, I think if Torres could pitch, like, she'd ask Coach for innings. Like, she just wants to be out there, and I love that out of her. And like, just the true utility that she is. And so I'm not surprised. My guess almost for a third string was Brito. But then I'm like, how can you move Brito at all? Obviously, that's a whole nother just rabbit hole we could go down, but there's been way too many rabbit holes in the last week or so for Ryan and myself between the Kate Gate and OU softball and everything in between.
Do you believe the photo that surfaced, by the way?
Absolutely not. Not her.
Easter walk. Easter. I've been told, and by I've been told as if I have sources inside the royal family. I watch a lot of soccer, a lot of British soccer. I've been told that on Easter, when the royal family does their walk thing, apparently the royal family loves just walking places, that is when we'll see Kate. Allegedly.
But then also it's like all the memes now are like, is Kate Middleton like the new like Jesus?
Yes.
You know, the Easter weekend and all that. I'm like, I can't take it anymore.
Also, we have Dune going on right now with some of the allegories and Dune. Like, we got that. I think what we need before the end of the season is we need the Alina Torres. You know the Burt Campanaris? I don't know if you remember this. I don't remember it happening, but basically like, he was the one that was, like, really, really famous in 65 for playing all nine positions throughout the game. And then every so often, right as opening day opens up on TikTok, there was a guy a couple years ago that played all nine positions. And, like, I don't remember that happening. I obviously remember Burt because he was in the 60s. But, like, I don't remember that happening, but I see it every single year on TikTok about this time. It was like, hey, opening day is coming up. Throwback to when this happened or that happened, and when he like ticks off all nine positions. I think we need the Alina Torres everything but pitcher. Like, I need to see Alina Torres. We can just count the outfield as one. I know every position's like wildly different in the outfield, but seven innings, and there's not many games that Oklahoma gets seven innings, so I'm trying to like make it as simple as possible. We need to see Alina Torres play all the way behind the play, everything in the infield, pop into the outfield, make it happen.
Does she have three or four positions crossed off this year?
This year, she's played...
Is it just first, second, and third?
She's played second. She's played third. Has she played first this year? She's played first. I know that last year, she had basically the flip-flopping between left field and right field. She primarily played in left field, but... Primarily played in right field, but flipped over to left field a little bit. Played third in Bedlam for sure. That was like the most notable moment at third. But yeah, I think we need to see Alina Torres try to go around the world in one game this year, which would be incredible.
I just think that also just go back to like Coach Gasso never having anyone being able to just bet on a lineup because she's like, oh, I'm going to throw you a curveball. And it's the nastiest curveball you've ever seen because you're never going to expect it. Although we did see Jada leadoff in every game this weekend, which I was truthfully surprised by, which I feel like I shouldn't be because it's Jada Coleman, you know, the country's best leadoff hitter. But I feel like after the first couple of weeks of softball season, I honestly have been scared to just put my money on Jada Coleman leading off for the OU Sooners.
Do you think part of that's because it feels like Jada's kind of settled into the season? To me, it felt like...
Yes, absolutely.
That Jada, we've talked about this before, that she gets so juiced for the start of the season, it takes her a couple weekends to settle back down. And it was just funny because Chris Plank noted it was last year, Mary Nutter, she hit her first home run, then obviously sets a career high in home runs. This year, Mary Nutter hits her first home run. She's been settled in since then. I think that, like, all the tinkering from 2 to 8, basically, is just what Patty Gasso does, playing the matchups, using her gut. I really felt like Jada moving around was a little bit just like, hey, settle in. Once you get back to Jada Coleman, then you'll be at the top. And I think it just kind of is representative of this lineup top to bottom feels incredibly comfortable as far as you got production across the board. It didn't matter if they're pinch hitting, who was starting all weekend. And you don't score 40 runs in 3 games unless it's like that is not just one good Sidney Sanders week and get you 40 runs. One good Terry Jada. Like everybody's got to be chipping it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back to Jada, I mean, she hit .444 for the weekend, but she's back to that .400 level of just an overall batting average, hitting .417. So when you see that, I know for like the first 2 or 3 weeks, people are like, oh my gosh, Jada Coleman, where's she at? She's not performing. And everyone's like the true people who know, they're like, just wait. Because obviously, like you said, she's just settled in. But then going into just like all of it, just the 1 through 14 hitters that you see, 12 of them have hit home runs. So like you said, everyone who has their chance, they're capitalizing. And I think that's super special in every kind of way. In a lot of different ways, not only just like hitting, like you said, Sidney Sanders obviously went off last week with all of her home runs, but she kind of also got it done this weekend. And Texas Tech, I don't know if they were just scared. I'm going to say they were kind of scared. And she had the 6 walks, but she still had 3 RBIs. Like 6 walks is unreal. Riley Ludlum had 8 walks this weekend. So when you really dive into that, I mean, that's just a whole nother way of producing in any way, shape, or form, not just, you know, finding every hole on the field, but just being able to capitalize on a free 60 feet that a team is willing to give you. And that is something that Coach Gasso really, really, really loves to emphasize.
I thought Sydney's Friday performance was so impressive because she drew 4 walks. I'm not sure if the first couple of those were like intentional walks or if it was just that they got behind in the count and just basically said, screw it, we're just not going to give her something. But then to come up that 5th at-bat where it's like, okay, there's a runner on 3rd. They have to pitch to you to be able to like mentally turn it back on after the 3rd and the 4th walk, if I remember correctly, were definitely just intentional. It just became a thing. To be able to stay locked in, and it wasn't a hit, but it was the sac fly RBI. I thought that was huge. That was huge. And so what is it, Bland and Hodge that don't have a home run yet this
yes.
year and everybody else has hit them? So
yes.
Of the 14 that have appeared. And it's not just like the hitters that are mirroring. I don't know if – I feel like I've talked to you off air about like fighting the Nicole May is not an elite pitcher thing that happens every single year. And I know – because trust me, I saw it in my mentions, the panic of Nicole May allowing 7 hits on Sunday. And I asked Patty Gasso about that today. And she was basically like,
relax.
People chill. Like, everybody chill. Like, if she has a ground, like, if she has a ground ball up the middle and then we turn a double play, like, not worried about it, stuff like that. But you were crunching some numbers, doing all the calculus and the big time maths. And it's, this is someone that last year, Nicole May, if you pull up, her ERA, her whip, all that stuff, it tracked right on with Jordy. And this year she's tracking with another one of her cohorts.
Yeah, for sure. And so I kind of totally did a deep dive and it kind of stemmed from me just curious because I really didn't dive into or really know Kelly's stats around this time last year just because obviously different team. So it kind of led me down that rabbit hole. And then I was like, okay, well then I want to just see the difference within May. And so I kind of just went off of inning base, not like timing base. So Kelly this year has 48 innings pitched, 27 hits, 9 runs, 9 earned runs, 17 walks, 56 strikeouts. She's given up 4 home runs and has an ERA of 1.31. Amazing numbers.
And of those 4 home runs, a vast majority of those came in relief against Liberty at Love's Field opening weekend in a game that was done.
Yes. Yeah. And so when I went back to Kelly Stats last year and found, you know, games from the first 48 similar innings, so I could match, you know, leading up to this, it was, it only went up to what would be the equivalent of last weekend's games. She had 48 and a third inning pitched, 22 hits, 16 runs, 10 of them earned, 22 walks, 84 strikeouts, 6 home runs given up, and a 1.45 ERA. So kind of similar. She's got less walks in less amount of time. She's given up a couple more hits, but when I think that kind of leads up to just being a little bit more comfortable with her defense and allowing your defense to play. And I know, like, that was a huge thing for me, is like being comfortable with giving up a little bit more hits, because I know in the grand scheme of things, like, I was like, ooh, a runner's on first. Like, I get to see, even though they're behind me, like, our team roll up a double play. I think those were some of my favorite moments. So I feel like that also just stems from just being comfortable with letting your defense work. And so I was really curious and just kind of dove into Kelly's, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to dive into Nicole May. And Nicole May last year, if everyone doesn't recall, this was kind of leading up through the Hall of Fame Classic last year is basically what the inning kind of similarity was. And so if everyone doesn't recall, that was like an unreal start for Nicole May.
Yeah, she was, you and Nicole were holding it together while Jordy was working her way back in from, I think, mentally battling the injury stuff. And two, the Hall of Fame Classic basically would have been Iowa State weekend a year ago because of one less bye week for, because more conference members.
Right. So this year, Nicole May has 41 innings pitched, 31 hits, 12 runs, 9 of them earned, 15 walks, 49 strikeouts. She's given up only 3 home runs and then has an ERA of 1.54. On any other team in the country, that's just elite. I think fans would beg for those kind of stats for their pitchers. So I feel like OU fans have to kind of put this into perspective. 2023, Nicole May had unreal numbers. I mean, for me, I was like, this chick is freaking amazing. Are you kidding? So I never understood, like, why people kind of put Nicole in just a different category than everyone else. I'm like, you guys, she's elite in every way of her own. And so when I dove into this, I'm like, I just feel like people just don't really aren't grateful enough for her. And so, like, leading up to this, it was 43 innings pitched. And so this was the game right before Northwestern, and when it comes to inning count. So Northwestern was the first run she'd gave up on a solo home run to Jordan Rutt. Don't know why I freakishly remember that specific pitch, truthfully.
That was always the, much like the streak, Patty Gasso was very tired of those questions by the end of it. I think she was also very tired of Nicole. Nicole still hasn't given up an earned run. She's like, I know! You guys remind me every time we talk about it.
So it was 43 innings pitched. She only had given up 18 hits, 0 runs, 0 earned runs, obviously, 13 walks, 68 strikeouts, 0.00 ERA. I mean, just unreal.
Bonkers.
And when you think about it, like, going that long and in terms of just innings pitched is unreal. And I keep saying unreal and just like, but it's like OU softball. So it's like, for sure. Yep. Mm-hmm. Casual, whatever. But I just want to just emphasize that Nicole May's numbers, even this year, even if you were to do the comparison, are still something that any other program, any other coach would just be so appreciative. And I know Coach Gasso is, because she's like, you guys, no need to panic. Like, Nicole May's got it. I mean, she had this weekend, yes, she had 6 innings pitched, she had 7 hits, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, she's given up so many hits. For her to give up 7 hits and a walk, I know she had 2 hit-by-pitches, but she didn't let those runs score, and I feel like that's just a different kind of just grittiness, a different kind of just ice in her veins kind of moment that not a lot of people appreciate. They're like, oh, nope, we want 0 across the board. And I'm like, that's kind of really hard, actually. Everyone shows the appreciation of the difficulty of, like, you know, the win streak and everything. But I don't feel like enough people show being appreciative of enough of just like the art that pitching is. And it's really hard to not have mistakes, because let me tell you, even some strikeout pitches are mistakes. And I'm like, oops, like that went there and she didn't you know, make contact with it. So that's just like how it is within pitching. It's crazy and sickening all at the same time.
Oklahoma's still number four in the country in staff ERA. I feel like the way that people talk about Oklahoma's pitch, I'm just like, yeah, it's still really good. And yeah. And here's the other thing on Nicole May. And correct me if I'm, you know, you've forgotten way more about pitching than I'll ever know. But something that I hesitate to use pitch to contact with Nicole May because she has strikeout pitches. Like, I feel like if you say she pitches to contact a lot, people mentally think she can't get strikeouts. That's not the case with Nicole. But Nicole, the way that she attacks, it feels like she generates a lot more contact just for ground balls, things like that.
I think that's a big thing this year. And when I watched in person, truthfully, after Mary Nutter, because I had amazing seats, and so I was closer to the action, it felt like, and I even talked to my dad about that because my dad was on the trip with me. I was like, I feel like Nicole May is really just throwing hard. Like, I haven't seen her throw like this. And she is someone, even in the weight room, she was one of my lifting partners. She is so unbelievably strong that I don't think anyone would really realize that. But I feel like this year she's throwing really hard. And for me, when I dive into that and comparing it to myself and how I throw, I've hit some top pitch speed. But in order for me to have what I would consider like my best game and my best kind of pitching, I'd rather throw like a couple mile an hour slower and have my movement and my spin rather than throwing super hard. And I feel like some people don't get that. They're like, oh, what's your fastest and how are you going to blow it by people? So I feel like maybe if she's throwing harder this season, just, you know, with strength, I mean, it's her fifth year going through OU weights, which is just unreal. It's a different kind of animal, truthfully. And she's gotten all this strength. She might have lost just a little bit of movement and a little bit of spin. And so obviously that's going to create a little bit more just contact pitching like you talked about. And that's not good. That's not bad in any way. It's not, you know, good. There's no positive or negative to it.
If you pair that, though, with it being year four, a whole nother year of people scouting Nicole May, and especially if you get into Big 12 play, I think that you're going to see maybe higher hit numbers against Nicole May. But if you keep looking up, and this is what Patty Gasso went to today to kind of put a bow on this, is that a single, okay, if that happens in seven straight innings and it amounts to zero runs, that's just as good as if you strike out 21 straight bat. Like, the same thing happens. It's a goose egg up on the scoreboard. The offense has got you. And that's been what Nicole May's continued to deliver. And I think that all of that probably plays into that if she's thrown a little bit harder, the ball's maybe not spinning as much, plus another year, maybe people are able to sit on it, but it's not amounted to runs. And she still had this thing about her. I always joked her freshman year that she was incredibly clutch and it was getting out of jams of her own doing because of walks. And this year, it just feels like she's traded the walks for a single here or there, and it hasn't burned her.
Yet. Right. And I'll dive into this a little bit later, too, but I'm going to die on the hill of it is so, so incredibly hard as a pitcher to be amazing 2 years in a row. Like, I don't think people understand that, as well as just with like the technology that's come out, the data, the film, all of it, the different tips that, you know, a hitting in an offense and people are able to dive into now. Pitchers are a little bit of at an, like, not just that they just don't have the upper hand anymore like they used to. And that's why I feel like you see just softball being a little bit more of an offensive game. But back to my point, it is so extremely hard to have two amazing back-to-back years. And so when I see someone have a breakout year, I'm like, ooh, can't wait to see next year. And I'm going to dive into this a little bit more later.
Beautiful. Can't wait for that. Can't wait for that, especially as we dive further and further into Big 12 play. But Oklahoma does have a big series this weekend. They'll take on the Baylor Bears. We'll get into all that and more coming up next. That's Alex Straco. I'm Ryan Chapman. This is The Road to OKC. We'll be right back here after this.
You're listening to The Road to OKC Softball Show with Ryan Chapman and former Sooner national champion and current OKC Spark pitcher Alex Straco on your home for the Sooners, 107.7, The Franchise.
Closing out the show, Road to OKC, Alex Straco sitting over there, Ryan Chapman sitting here. Alex, it was a series I was really looking forward to before the season as Oklahoma and Baylor get it going. Baylor, to this point, has not quite lived up to some of their preseason billing. Couple of close games against Tennessee to start the year, gets the victory over Oklahoma State, loses that series, though Oklahoma State obviously winning the Friday and Sunday games. And then the Baylor Bears, they go and they got themselves swept by Kansas last week, which is not a mark on Baylor. Welcome to the top 20, Kansas. Happy for you. The Jayhawks have some of the best uniforms in the sport. They've also gotten a lot better both in the circle and offensively. But what have you seen from Baylor, Alex? As this was a team that I know last year, I assume you guys had this series circled after what happened at Ye Olde Getterman Classic. Dari Orme doing her thing, but hasn't quite been the follow-up season for her for the Baylor Bears, mainly because she hasn't pitched.
Yeah, I think that's just been a little bit of a question mark for me. I kind of went into a deep dive of, like, what is she doing? What's wrong kind of deal? And I haven't found anything. But how do you go from just having the headlines that she had, whether that was, you know, beating OU last year, she had, you know, the program's first ever 7-inning perfect game, just so many accolades when it came to her at Baylor last year. And when I dove into stats today, she has 8 1/3 innings pitched and a 2.52 ERA. And I was like, I'm confused because what's the drop off? Is there a reason for it? I know they had a pitcher last year injured and kind of, I think she's back this year. So that's a big part of it too. And you have two other pitchers that have been doing well, Riley Crandall and Aaliyah Benford, taking up a huge chunk of their innings, each having just under 60 innings apiece. So I was just like, I'm confused because I feel like this was kind of their year of having, you know, a little bit more of a complete staff, and their offense really kind of heated up last year and they did some damage to more than maybe expected. And so there was high hopes for them this season. And I'm just really not seeing it. Although, yes, conference are 1-5 and just kind of confusion, truthfully, from the whole Kansas sweep. They're 16-8 and they beat UCLA, Mizzou, Oregon, and Louisiana Lafayette twice. So it's like, I'm not really sure what to think of them.
It feels like last year's team. Last year, they were good enough on the high end for obviously Glenn Moore to be honored as the co-coach of the year alongside Patty Gasso, all that stuff. But the question was consistency. And that's, I think, what a lot of people wanted to see Baylor to take that step forward to maybe be frisky. For me, I had them as like a dark horse for a regional host, like a 13, 14, 15. If they could take that step forward, I think they have that top end. Just full transparency, I'm not sure what's happened with Orme. I don't know if she's injured. There's not a lot of coverage surrounding that. And I've not watched a Baylor game with the sound on this year. I don't know if you know this about me. I'm like big on, I don't watch a lot of sports with the sound on. So if the commentators are talking about it, sorry. Like, I watched the whole Oklahoma State series. I never just clocked that Orme wasn't there because it was always second screen to Oklahoma and Iowa State, and I just don't watch commentators with the sound on often. So not sure there. So we need to send you to Waco, and you can cover the Bears and get the inside scoop for us, and we'll have both things covered.
I went to Waco twice last year. I feel like I've done my Waco.
You've
time.
Done your Waco. Yeah, you've done your time. Did you guys hit the Dr. Pepper Factory? You don't have to answer that.
Yes, I did.
You
and
did?
It was amazing.
It is one of the great things in all of the world. Like, Waco should be known for Dr. Pepper, not all the other stuff. And we'll
Absolutely.
Just breeze straight by that. But it'll be interesting to see. Govan's still back. So that's who's going to be your heavy hitter, your knockout punch kind of at the top. As she played a huge part. She was instrumental in that Oklahoma State series. But what have you seen from Baylor's lineup? What do you remember from the lineup last year, the difficulties that, what were the landmines you guys were having to work around, and how much of that is kind of returned?
Yeah, I'm not really sure how much they graduated, but I just do know them being just gritty hitters, of being able to just kind of go deep into counts and being able to fight off a pitcher's pitch when I remember diving into it. And the biggest thing I remember about Govan's scouting report was don't throw a changeup, and I feel like that is just still a little bit of a, you know, a sore spot for me from last year. But
how many changeups did you throw her, Alex?
I don't remember, but I do know that a changeup was the one that she put out the yard on the loss. So I remember that very, very vividly. But she is their leader in average and hitting .483 for the season. So obviously huge average hitter. She's gotten only 9 RBIs, though. Wasn't sure if like that was correct is just runners not getting in position for her to score. She's got only 2 home runs, A big thing I saw was 21 walks on the season. And after that, I think the closest was 7 walks. So obviously, maybe, you know, pitching staffs are being a little bit more cautious around her, or she just has an amazing eye. But after that, it's kind of a fall off. And their other two bigger-ish hitters were Emily Haught and Taylor Strain, and they're hitting in, you know, lower 300s. So there wasn't really a huge offensive kick from the lineup that I'm seeing within statistics.
I think that's played a lot into the walk numbers for Govan, because I think that coach has just been very comfortable to say, we'll put her on, and more times than not, that's not going to come back around and turn a solo bomb into a two-run shot or anything like that. So it'll be interesting to see, but also this is first weekend at Hall of Fame Stadium of the year. Friday game at Hall of Fame, Saturday, Sunday coming back to Love's Field. I know we're running out of time here quickly, but Alex, what do you remember about that Texas game a year ago? Because that was not your first trip to Hall of Fame Stadium, but for the Hall of Fame Classic, it was just the lower deck. For the Texas game, it was the upper deck that was fully open, setting the single game attendance record. Just what was that situation like as far as how different it is to go from Marita Hines up to Hall of Fame and kind of have that? Because it'll be the first experience for not Kelly Maxwell to pitch on that field, but for the freshmen, for some of the transfers, Riley Ludlum, her first experience there, stuff like that. I hope we get to talk to Riley Friday, frankly, because I just want to be like, so, thoughts.
Yeah, no, I'm excited just to see kind of their reaction. I remember just the first time I truly went up there was Hall of Fame Classic, and just kind of like taking a moment for myself of like, ooh, I get to play here. This is so cool. And everyone's like, oh, just wait, kind of deal. And then Texas came. It was kind of cool, just like the slow build into it all. The Texas game was unreal. I mean, just the upper deck addition to attendance, I think, is a difference maker. And I know coach kind of points this out of like the moment where like everyone turned on their flashlights and kind of had that moment too. It was just so cool, and kind of setting that, you know, regular season, you know, attendance record. It's just cool to just continue to break ceilings, but then also just kind of be surrounded in that aspect. And I feel like truthfully Loves has that surrounding atmosphere, electricity in the air kind of feel. So I almost am curious as to how different of a transition it'll be. Because I feel like Loves kind of adds to the factor of it all. So I don't think it'll be truthfully a huge jump, because I know from Marita to Hall of Fame, it was a big jump, but I don't think it'll be too much of a jump from Loves and just the atmosphere that stadium has had the past 2 weekends it's been played in.
Yeah, Hall of Fame is rocking for that Texas game, certainly, but it's not complete until you get the stands that come in for the World Series, right?
Absolutely.
Outside the outfield wall. You don't get the full surrounded nature until that, and that's when it really kicks up another level. So we won't have that Friday, obviously, but it still should be a ton of fun. And I just selfishly, Riley Ludlum, the so pure of just like, I can't believe I'm here kind of thing, and so I can't wait. I want to get her snap judgment of just like, so what do you think, Hall of Fame Stadium, thoughts, and just see what that's like. But should be a ton of fun. That one will be on Friday, like we said, Saturday, Sunday, back at Love's Field. And for us, this is our final non-Wednesday show until the season closes down. We will have a show that is post-national championship when the Women's College World Series shuts down, just putting a bow on the college softball season, no matter who's playing in the champ series. But it'll be Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock, the rest of the way for you and I, which should make things pretty easy. If you missed any of the show, I know we're on a different night or a different time, kind of replaying on Wednesday. As always, just head to thefranchiseok.com. Search us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, The Road to OKC. You'll have the whole thing playing back. And to Alex, thank you, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Sounds good.
For Alex Starocco, I'm Ryan Chapman. This has been The Road to OKC, and we will link up with you as the Sooners take on Baylor and get 3 series into the Big 12 slate, and as they're preparing for a big road swing to Kansas next week, and all that fun stuff next Wednesday on The Road to OKC.